Freedom has many difficulties. But we have never had to put a wall up to keep our people in. Freedom is indivisible. And when one man is enslaved, all are not free.
Modern war has become a struggle for men's minds as well as for their bodies. Today we face an enemy who spends enormous sums of money and manpower all over the globe in an attempt to subvert the thinking of the people of the free world, to confuse, to divide, and ultimately to subjugate.
It is a contest unlike any we have ever faced in our history as a nation.
Contest for the minds and hearts of people around the world, all people.
When power corrupts, poetry cleanses. We must never forget that art is not a form of propaganda. It is a form of truth.
Psychologists find that control of emotions can be gained by understanding the stimulus-response pattern. Many everyday things become associated with these primary stimuli, partly by a process called conditioning.
It's a strange, shadowy world, the doctored photograph, the misquotation, the insinuation, and the lie.
I think of fire connecting the emotions.
Cause, effect.
Got to get a hold of yourself.
We would have to work together. You have to come.
Where lied our country and all who serve it? And the glow from that fire can truly light the world.
Yes, in modern warfare, our military leaders are finding that words and ideas are highly effective.
It won't be called martial law, but it'll be called a civil emergency. Then they'll claim the Russians hit the power grid, and part of the power grid will go down. And then they'll claim the Russians have hit the banks. And then they'll tank the economy, claiming it's the Russians that did it, and part of the power grid, and you're in full martial law. And then for issues of national security, to get the banks back on, to get the power back on in some areas, to stop the burning cities with the left out just torching everything, Biden, will have to declare a national emergency, and they'll have to crack down on disinformation on all sides. And they'll turn off the funding to Hamas and turn off the funding to their minions and turn off the funding to Black Lives Matter. And, they'll turn off all the little nationalist patriot front that are clearly feds. When they go to full martial law, there's a very good chance they're going to go ahead and kill Trump. And I would predict the same day they kill Trump, they'll probably kill Senator Paul or try. They'll kill Matt Gaetz. They'll try to kill me. And they'll go ahead because they know Joe's awakening. They're going to go ahead and kill Joe Rogan. They'll kill Joe. And, they've already got plans how to do it, how to line it up. One guy they'll claim was a murder-suicide. Oh, he killed himself and shot his wife and killed himself. Oh, this guy, died of a heroin overdose. Oh, this guy was in a shootout. This guy got carjacked. But they may not even care and just gut our houses and just launch hand grenades into the thing. I mean, they're not going to care at that point. All right? And they're going to have communists just green-lit, just burning courthouses, burning buildings, just torching everything. So you'll have cities on fire everywhere, just people looting, murdering. The police will all be hiding in the police stations. People will be firing grenades into the police stations. You're the first people, once they secure their takeover, that they are going to kill.
While other networks lie to you about what's happening now, InfoWars tells you the truth about what's happening next. Visit InfoWars.com/show and share the link today.
You are the first person, once they secure their takeover, that they are going to kill. Now, we can see all the different pieces coming together for this catalysm of civil war. And we can just list them very quickly. First, they try to take him off the ballot. Failed. Then they try to charge him with all of these felony charges, yet to be determined what's going to happen. It seems like a lot of these courts are kangaroo courts, so even if he's innocent, which he is, he's going to be found guilty potentially for at least one of these charges, it seems to me likely. It's incredibly dangerous. Then if he goes to jail, they want to strip him of his Secret Service protection so they can kill him or so somebody in prison can just kill him. And they're crashing everything else around this. They're coming out with warnings of pending cyber attacks, warnings of terrorist attacks. They're keeping the border wide open intentionally, and they're sponsoring this invasion of the United States. Keep in mind, folks, the United States has been invaded by more people since the onset of the Biden regime than Ukraine has been invaded by Russians. More people have illegally come into the United States than Russians have gone into Ukraine over the course of the last 4 years. This is a federally sponsored invasion. And then they're funding all of these protests to sow division. And then they're giving all of our money to either Ukraine or Israel or Taiwan. And they're waving, blatantly waving the flags of Ukraine, the flag of Ukraine and flags of other nations in the halls of Congress while shaming the American flag, literally trying to tear it down to raise the Palestinian flag. And frat boys, of all people, have to be the ones to hold it up to keep the American flag, the U.S. flag, from touching the ground. And you can just see in these prosecutions the gag order, the attempt to silence the truth. They wouldn't have to silence Trump if the truth was on their side. You don't have to silence somebody for lying. You only ever have to silence them for telling the truth about what you're doing. What's the famous quote? If you want to know who's controlling you, just find out who you're not allowed to criticize. So let's run clip number 25 here. This is Trump speaking about the gag order after court the other day, and then unpack it on the other side.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we're responding to Federal
Wire. No, you won't stop me from testifying. The gag order is not to testify. The gag order stops me from talking about people and responding when they say things about me. We have people saying things about me, and I'm not allowed to respond. So this judge has taken away my constitutional right. And has the Republican candidate and somebody that's leading Biden by a lot, I should be able to respond. But this guy's got me with a gag order. Now, what we're filing, I think today, a constitutional motion to get this out. We'll be filing a lawsuit on the constitutionality of it. But if somebody says something about me and I'm not allowed to respond, that's never happened before. Thank you. Thank you.
The process is the punishment. So even if they don't convict him, this whole process is designed to be the punishment. It's why you have the likes of Hope Hicks crying and other witnesses just being subjected to this tyranny, this suffering, basically torture by litigation. And it's not just Alex Jones. Of course, Alex Jones has experienced this as well. But they are going to come after everyone who is perceived to be a political dissident to the established political class or the deep state. And we know that Congress is terrified of the intelligence community. We know that they're controlled by the intelligence community. We know that the president of the United States is controlled by the intelligence community. And most of them have been over the course of the last 50, 60, or 70 years. And I just want to dive into this monologue from Gutfield the other day, which I think is really telling. This is clip number 32. Watch Greg Gutfield exposes two-tiered justice system as New York City prosecutors try to jail Trump but let violent felons loose. I thought this was incredibly powerful. 32.
Judge Merchan held Donald Trump in contempt of court and fined him $9,000 for violating a gag order. Trump should have reached into his wallet, grabbed the $9,000 in cash, and thrown it at the judge and said, "Here, go bang Stormy Daniels 8 times. It's funny. A city that can't keep violent felons in jail wants to lock up a president for talking. Their priorities are more out of whack than a morning show hosted by people who hate each other.
It's unbelievable. Thanks for coming on, B.
I know, it's going well. Meanwhile, Judge Merchant's daughter, Lauren, a progressive political hack, is sending out solicitations invoking the Trump trial, raising millions for her clients. Among them, Adam Schiff, lead prosecutor in Trump's first impeachment, who will hopefully use the money for a neck transplant. So Trump's not allowed to talk. How did he react? Is the gag order unique, unconstitutional, corrupt?
This gag order is not only unique, it's totally unconstitutional. This is a corrupt system we're in. And I think the people are understanding it.
And they are understanding it. Now, as anyone with a pulse knows, and that's not you, Joe Biden, trying to gag Trump is like trying to put a cork in Mount Vesuvius. It's not happening. Because isn't it nice to have a president who doesn't need a teleprompter?
But isn't it nice to have a president who doesn't need a teleprompter? Not that he can read it anyway. He can't read it. Now, think if I read my teleprompter and I'm going, well, let's see, because of the weakness in the economy, I'd like to apologize. Pause. What was that? That's unbelievable. Pause.
And of course, every one of these fake cases is bull.
Every one of these fake cases is bullshit.
He said it. But for Donald Trump, this bull is gold. Because despite the legal farce, Trump's cracking jokes and living his best life. And Joe, while Trump mocks Joe for saying pause, Joe seems permanently stuck on pause.
Connecting with black-owned media outlets, I speak with over 6 million people every day. And we've been trying to catch up with you, and I've had talks with the vice president, but whenever you're out there, we want to talk to you. Because I feel like, I don't know, I got your back.
And obviously, even when Joe Biden is pretending to be listening, you can tell that he's entirely vacant. So I think that's enough of this gut feel clip. It was a great monologue. You can see the whole thing on X. But we have this attack then on President Trump, this seemingly, obviously, frankly, kangaroo court lawfare. And it's not only the fact that Donald Trump is innocent of all these crimes that's so frustrating about what we're seeing from the deep state. But it's also the fact that the leftists in leadership, namely the Biden crime family, are guilty of so many crimes that are being totally not prosecuted, totally unprosecuted. Some of the same exact crimes, for example, that Donald Trump is in trouble for. So classified documents in Mar-a-Lago is a problem, but classified documents in Biden's garage isn't a problem. So it's not only the fact that Trump is innocent, but it's the fact that the left is actually guilty of many of these crimes and not being prosecuted at all. This is the two-tiered justice system. And obviously, the Biden administration has no intention of hiring anybody competent for any of its roles, whether it's Pete Buttigieg or whether it's Karine Jean-Pierre or whether it's this Jared Bernstein fellow. Obviously, there is a push to place people with the right Marxist philosophy in key positions rather than placing people in these positions who are actually capable or have a background in doing those jobs. We see it in the private industry with airlines coming out and saying that they want to hire women disproportionately to be in to fly, or minorities disproportionately, or people with mental health issues disproportionately. And we see it in the political industrial complex as well. But here's this clip. This is Jared Bernstein. Now, scroll down a little bit on the Wikipedia. Jared Bernstein is an American economist who is the chair of the United States Council of Economic Advisors. I'm going to scroll down to his education a little bit, which is going to be below his picture here on Wikipedia. If you look at his education, this is not somebody who studied economics or even business administration. Scroll further down. It's going to be below his personal details. Yep, education. This is somebody who went to the Manhattan School of Music and got a bachelor in music. So he played jazz bass for years in New York City. Then he got his master's of social work at Hunter College. And then at Columbia University, of all places, this Marxist leftist Palestinian protesting university, that's where he got his doctorate of social work. So this is somebody who, yes, has advanced degrees, but literally no background in economics whatsoever, who's the chair of the Economic Council. Let's run clip 19 and just see how retarded this man really is.
The U.S. government can't go bankrupt because we can print our own money.
it obviously begs the question, why exactly are we borrowing in a currency that we print ourselves? I'm waiting for someone to stand up and say, why do we borrow our own currency in the first place?
Like you said, they print the dollar. So why does the government even borrow?
Well, again, some of this stuff gets, some of the language that the MM, some of the language and concepts are just confusing. I mean, the government definitely prints money, and it definitely lends that money, which is why the government definitely prints money, and then it lends that money by selling bonds. Is that what they do? They sell bonds. Yeah, they sell bonds, right? Since they sell bonds and people buy the bonds and lend them the money. Yeah, so a lot of times, at least to my ear with MMT, the language and the concepts can be kind of unnecessarily confusing, but there is no question that the government prints money and then it uses that money to, I don't get it. I don't know what they're talking about. Like, because it's like the government clearly prints money. It does it all the time, and it clearly borrows. Otherwise, we wouldn't be having this debt and deficit conversation. So I don't think there's anything confusing there.
Wow. Utterly disturbing. Now, throw his Wikipedia page back up. Clearly, the reason this person has the position that he has the job that he has, is because of his philosophy rather than because of any of his competence or understanding. Now, if you scroll down, there's somewhere on his Wikipedia page, guys, I want to find it. He has opened up a dialogue. There we go. It's perfect. Dialogue with MMT. So in 2018, Bernstein opened a public dialogue with proponents of modern monetary theory, which is a branch of economics that is outside the mainstream. So even mainstream economists say that this is a BS school of thought or philosophy around economics. Let's open up the modern monetary theory Wikipedia page because I want to read from it. I was reading from this last night. Modern monetary theory or modern money theory is a macroeconomic theory that describes currency as a public monopoly and unemployment as evidence that a currency monopolist is overly restricting the supply of the financial assets needed to pay taxes and satisfy savings desires. So MMT is outside the mainstream of economic thought. According to MMT, governments do not need to worry about accumulating debt in and of itself, since they create new money by using fiscal policy in order to pay interest. So the philosophy that he opened up a dialogue regarding in 2018, keep in mind, this guy that didn't even understand how money was made, who's the chief advisor on the Economic Council for the Biden administration, who has a background in social work with no background in economics and a bachelor's degree in music because he likes to play bass in jazz bands. The philosophy that he has opened up a dialogue with, that he advocates, that he suggests is healthy in terms of economic policy, is that of unlimited spending and debt at a national level and printing, because we could just print the debt away, apparently. And somehow these economists, these social workers, these leftists in power make the claim, and people believe them when they make the claim, that they are the ones who advocate for the most vulnerable among us. They are the ones that care about the black communities or the immigrant communities or the Hispanic communities or the people of color or the people who are poor, the low socioeconomic status. They are somehow the champions and the heroes of all of those people struggling to make ends meet, working three jobs, suffering, unable to afford housing, unable to send their kids to private school, unable to afford groceries, unable to put gas in their car. They somehow have branded themselves, the left has branded itself as the champion of these people, while it simultaneously hires people to create economic policy that exacerbates and perpetuates the very problems that leftists claim to be solving. You realize that when you print money endlessly to pay the interest of a debt, that's what causes hyperinflation, right? And you realize that hyperinflation is great for the political class, and it's great for the basically economic elite, because the wealthiest among us have their money in the stock market, in the Fortune 500 companies, in the index funds. And when you inflate the currency, all of the values of the stocks go up. So when you hear record high values and record high Dow Jones industrial average scores and points, you're actually seeing a reflection of massive inflation. Because when you print all this money and it's just sitting in the banks don't know what to do with it. So they either buy up a ton of real estate or they put it in index funds, because index funds are the most reliable and safest bet. And so the stock market explodes, the wealthy get incredibly rich, the political class, who is legally allowed to do insider trading, gets incredibly rich, while black people and people of color and the middle class struggles because their incomes don't go up, they don't have any money in the market because they're already struggling to make ends meet, and all of the prices explode. But they're the champions. I mean, this guy is introducing economic policies and philosophies that are basically Marxist, that suggest we should inflate the currency as much as possible, and he's got no background in economics, and he's supposed to be an expert in social work. You would think that if you were somebody who was passionate about social work, you would do things like mitigate inflation, because inflation disproportionately impacts the most vulnerable among us. I mean, let's look at what happened to the black community after Nixon brought us off of the gold standard in the 70s. Almost immediately after that happened, we have under the Carter administration hyperinflation, and hyperinflation took the entire black community in this country from a place where they were barely making ends meet to a place where they were no longer making ends meet. And that's that type of financial strife is what causes divorce. And so then you have single moms raising black kids in the ghetto. And then you have dads who are turning to crime because legitimate earnings aren't coming in the same way. So then you have the imprisonment of single males go up, you have crime go up, you have single mothers go up. All the problems that we see in the black community today are not a result of systemic racism per se. They're a result of bad economic policy because of a corrupt political establishment that is willing to inflate the currency if it means it's going to be more wealth for their bottom line. And you got to keep in mind, folks, that the government is supposed to pass increases in taxes with Congress. But through inflation, they can tax you without calling it a tax. So they run cover. They run PR cover when they print more money, because it doesn't count, doesn't show up as an increase in taxes, because they don't actually take any money from you. They just make your money less valuable. And when they print the money, it goes straight into the federal government's coffers. And the politicians decide through the budgets that they pass where that federal money goes. So when they print the money and your money gets worthless, they put it in the federal budget and the politicians get to choose what gets funded where. And it always goes to NGOs or contractors or corporations that they are personally invested in. So, okay, I'm going to invest in Boeing 30 days before we make an announcement that Boeing is going to provide X number of jets to Ukraine, for example. And that's how they make money. They inflate the currency. It doesn't count as a tax. Then they invest in Boeing, for example. And then they pass legislation that ensures that Boeing gets a ton of your tax dollars. And then they get the kickback on their portfolios. That's what's going on here. And that's what hurts the most vulnerable among us. That's why black people and people of color and minorities and the socioeconomic and the disavowed are turning over to Republicanism more than ever, because the Democrats have been making promises to these people for decades and they have never fulfilled a single promise, and things have only gotten worse. The same cities that had crime problems, the same neighborhoods that had crime problems 10, 20, 30, 40, or 50 years ago have problems. Things are getting worse. People are struggling more and more to make ends meet. And the gap between the wealthy and the poor is widening in the United States, while the leftists blame it on capitalism. It's actually a result of this inflation. It's because they're stealing from us. So the next time you go to the grocery store and walk out with less than is on your list, keep in mind that this is happening because of leftist policy. And it's not just the leftists, it's the Republicans too. The Republicans in power who actually are leftists, keep in mind, because it's a uniparty. Both parties have betrayed you, and we need to realize that this is not about Democrats versus Republicans in the United States of America. It's about the people versus the political class. The real enemy is not your neighbor who votes for the Democrats or your neighbor who votes for the Republicans. Your real enemy is this political class. It's a political industrial complex that extends beyond the military industrial complex, because it doesn't just apply to military issues. It applies to every organization, every NGO, every nonprofit, every contractor that supplies services or aid paid for by the federal government and invested in by the political class. This is the grift. And this is why billionaires all support the leftists as much as possible, because they know that the more money the leftists print and the more they spend, the more their investments are going to go up. Billionaires have the vast majority of their money, their wealth, in the market. because if they keep it in their bank, it, first of all, it's not going to be FDIC insured, because I think the the federal government only insure like up to $300,000 of the money in your checking account. So they have to invest it, otherwise they lose as things inflate. And then when they invest it, they love the inflation. It's a policy of a setup. The setup is the policy. And we have to realize that it's coming from leftism, whether it's leftism conducted by Republicans or leftism conducted by Democrats. It is a philosophy of leftism that is causing all of our problems here in the United States of America, especially for the most vulnerable, especially for the middle class. So if you believe in helping Black communities or Hispanic communities or Latino communities or whatever, the LGBTQ communities or the mentally ill, if you believe in helping all of those people who suffer the most in the United States of America, then you should never, ever vote for a Democrat. And there, frankly, are very few Republicans you should vote for, too. You should pay close attention, because if they want to fund wars, if they want to fund conflicts, if they want to increase and expand the services and products provided to you by the federal government, it's just because they want to print money and make things harder for you so you can be more dependent upon them. Does that make sense? And just to give you a sense of what happens when we do things like get involved in these military conflicts, or we do things like print money for foreign aid or wars overseas, why don't you look at this video? This is clip number 15 of women being recruited to fight in Ukraine because, frankly, all the young men are dead. Clip 15. We've seen videos of people with Down syndrome in Ukrainian military uniforms. We've seen videos now of women being recruited. We've seen clips as well of elderly men being recruited to fight in this war. And we're funding the entire thing. And the reason we're funding it is because A, our money is fake, and B, our established political class wants to inflate the currency as much as possible. And they're hiring people like Jared Bernstein with backgrounds in social work and in music to run economics, even though they don't understand the most basic principles of economics. I am not somebody who claims to be an expert in economics. I studied audio engineering technology in college with a minor in philosophy and an emphasis on leadership, okay? I'm not supposed to know anything about economics, but I read John Maynard Keynes. I read Wealth of Nations. I've read Milton Friedman. I've read Ayn Rand, and I understand on a basic level what's happening. I read End the Fed. I understand that our government prints money, and every time the Federal Reserve prints money and gives it to the government, that's inflation, and it's an inflation tax. It's very simple stuff. And it's unsustainable because eventually you cross a threshold, a critical mass, where the inflation is so great that the underbelly that funds and pays income tax at all just totally collapses and stops making any money, and it cuts off all income tax revenue for the federal government. And then the federal government can't make payments on the interest of its debt that it's accumulated. And when that happens, that is called a default, folks. That is a bankrupt nation. And given that our dollar, that our economy is the global reserve currency, if we default, if the dollar defaults, that is total global economic collapse. And they're advocating for it explicitly in who they hire as economic advisors, because they want the collapse, because they're setting the stage for what happens after the collapse, folks. More news on the other side. Stick with us. And, man, we've really been unpacking everything. This has been a great show. I've been having a lot of fun. We are going to open up the lines for calls. Go ahead and call in 877-789-2539. 877-789-2539. Now, it's possible that I won't take any calls until the top of the hour, but I want to open up the lines now just because the sooner you call, the more likely I am to get to you. I may take some calls during this long 30-minute segment or so. And I also want to give the crew the opportunity to screen some of these calls. So go ahead and call in 877-789-2539 and just note that I may keep you on hold for about 15 minutes or so, but I might go right to you if I see something I like on the board. So, all right. We've established that the political class is intentionally inflating the currency for the sake of ripping the American people off, and it's disproportionately harming the most vulnerable among us. We've established that leftism as a philosophy is something that has been adopted by both the Democratic and the Republican Party, and that it's all a setup, a scam, which has an inevitable outcome. That outcome being the total collapse of our economy and our civilization. And what they're doing is they're setting up the pieces for what's going to happen after this collapse. So they're catalyzing, creating, instigating, manufacturing this crisis of total economic global collapse and establishing the infrastructure now for what's going to happen on the reset on the other side. So when this collapse happens, they're going to do things like usher in a central bank digital currency that monitors all transactions. And then once they control the entire world economy from a central point, they will control the entire populace. And they will have successfully established a global political class, a one world government, even if it's not called that, even if we have this illusion of national sovereignty among various nations of the world, similar to how members of the European Union have an illusion of being their own country, even though the European Union is a conglomeration of all those nations. So even if they don't call it a one world government, that's what it's going to be. And from these central globalist banks, they are going to be able to control every transaction. Of course, there'll be black markets and there'll be people attempting to use things like Bitcoin to transact and do business outside of the established system. But all of these other cryptocurrencies, all of these other exchanges and trading and all this stuff that falls out of their system to come is going to be criminalized. So doing things like buying something with Bitcoin could land you in prison for 12 to 36 months or even longer. That's what they're going to do. And I know Bitcoin's an awesome technology. I know blockchain technology is amazing and it had such great promise. But I'm telling you right now, this stuff is not going to be legal after the next collapse. Because they're going to want to ensure that they determine what the next global reserve currency is. And they're going to want it to be a central bank digital currency that they can control and monitor all the transactions of, and they can literally determine which of your dollars can be spent on gasoline versus groceries versus mortgage. And anything that falls outside that could compromise or subvert this new one world monetary system is going to be criminalized with ranging penalties and ranging different nations of the world. That's what they're setting the stage for. That's why they want this to collapse. So in order to prevent this from happening, we have to raise a massive amount of awareness and sentiment for populism, sentiment for national sovereignty. That's why they are trying to cripple national sovereignty as much as possible with things like having an open border. And I know that traditionally speaking, when we've talked about illegal immigration, we've been talking about Mexicans flooding across the border because they want to do landscaping or they want to work construction and send the money back. But things have changed, folks. This massive migration in the United States is from those coming from the CCP, sponsored by the CCP, to those coming from terrorist institutions and organizations. And we've got this breaking story right here. This is Raw Egg Nationalist on Infowars.com. Suspected ISIS terrorist was living in the U.S. illegally for 2 years before being picked up by ICE. This is clip number 28. If you have that ready, please go ahead and run it.
Tonight, among the record wave of migrants crossing the southern border, a suspected ISIS member who lived freely in the U.S. for nearly 2 years. Two U.S. officials tell NBC News. 33-year-old Jakovir Atoyev of Uzbekistan crossed into Arizona in February 2022, where he was apprehended and vetted by both Customs and Border Protection and ICE. He was not on the U.S. terror watch list, and he was released into the U.S., those sources tell us. Then, in May 2023, Uzbekistan put out an international alert, saying that Atoyev was affiliated with ISIS and wanted there. But it took nearly a year for U.S. officials to figure out the suspected ISIS member was living freely here in the U.S.
U.S. officials tell us DHS made the alarming discovery after reviewing Atoyev's application for asylum. Shortly after DHS connected the dots, ICE arrested him here in Baltimore just 2 weeks ago.
Former Homeland Security officials tell us his case raises red flags about the vetting process for migrants after they cross the border.
Should alarm bells be going off here?
We are in the midst of a really volatile threat environment. Anytime I see a gap in a system like we are seeing in this case, I do have concerns. Anytime you have just a massive volume of people like we do, our systems are overwhelmed and we need more resources at the southern border to properly protect the homeland.
And it follows our exclusive report last month that a migrant U.S. official say was affiliated with an Afghan terror group, crossed the border, and was released into the U.S. because agents lacked information to connect him to the terror watch list. That man, Mohammed Harwin, was arrested hours after our report aired. The FBI director recently alerted Congress the agency is investigating whether ISIS has a hand in smuggling migrants across the southern border.
There is a particular network where some of the overseas facilitators of the smuggling network have ISIS ties that we're very concerned about.
Two U.S. officials tell NBC News DHS has not yet concluded that Atoyev is part of ISIS, but they are questioning him in detention. A DHS spokesperson tells us he remains in U.S. custody and there is no threat to public safety.
All right. So we told you that they were going to import terrorists into the country. This is just one anecdotal example of that actually happening. This is something that the European Union has been suffering from for decades, members of the European Union, namely Germany, and we're going to get into the German story, but I just want to give you an example of what this sentiment amounts to. This is clip number 22. So we're importing these people into the country, and we're seeing these protests funded by Soros, and look what these protesters did to this driver making the wrong turn in clip 22 here. Pepper spraying, and finally he decides to get out of his car and just run because he doesn't want to run people over. Apparently they caught up with him and he's hospitalized now. I don't know if that's true or not, but if they caught him, I mean, that's just going to be brutal. You can just tell. And I know that those students are just radicalized faculty and students at these universities. It's not the same as importing terrorists, but they're doing this in conjunction of importing this leftist philosophy, this Marxist philosophy. We proved that it's actually communism. It's not really Sharia law or other things. I mean, there's some of those sentiments that exist within these groups. But this is a Marxist takeover of all of our institutions. And like I said before, this is not something that's just happening in the United States. If you want to see the future of the United States, just look at the present in Germany, where over half of all Germans believe they are being replaced in their own country. So over half of all Germans believe they are being replaced by immigrants in their own country, and a majority want Islamic immigration to the country to end. According to a new poll by the Nias Media Group, 57% of Germans surveyed said they were afraid that Germans will become a minority in Germany. By contrast, 37% said they were not afraid of this happening. Nearly half, 45%, said they believed Germans were deliberately being replaced with immigrants. The German Office for the Protection of the Constitution classifies this belief, often referred to as the Great Replacement, as a right-wing extremist belief. 41% of respondents disagreed. So let's look at clip 34 and see what's happening in Germany. Are the Germans right? And this was the kind of thing that even the Democrats 30 years ago would have been opposed to. We're going to run clip 4 here in a second. Bill Clinton speaking to the American people, to members of Congress, explicitly stated that illegal immigration was a problem, explicitly stated that it was harming people who were born here natively, implicitly advocated for an America First policy. Now, I know that what he said and what he did are two different things, and I know the Clinton Foundation and Bill Clinton was corrupt and evil, but let's just look at what was considered popular mainstream political rhetoric to the American people just a handful of decades ago. This is clip number 4.
All Americans, not only in the states most heavily affected, but in every place in this country, are rightly disturbed by the large numbers of illegal aliens entering our country. The jobs they hold might otherwise be held by citizens or legal immigrants. The public service they use impose burdens on our taxpayers. That's why our administration has moved aggressively to secure our borders more by hiring a record number of new border guards, by deporting twice as many criminal aliens as ever before, by cracking down on illegal hiring, by barring welfare benefits to illegal aliens. In the budget I will present to you, we will try to do more to speed the deportation of illegal aliens who are arrested for crimes, to better identify illegal aliens in the workplace, as recommended by the commission headed by former Congresswoman Barbara Jordan. We are a nation of immigrants, but we are also a nation of laws. It is wrong and ultimately self-defeating for a nation of immigrants to permit the kind of abuse of our immigration laws we have seen in recent years, and we must do more to stop it.
And it's met with a round of applause, a bipartisan round of applause, mind you. I mean, today, whenever you see a president speak to Congress, you never see the opposite party really stand up. Very rarely. I mean, it happens sometimes. But you're seeing universal support for common sense America First policies back then. What happened? Well, you've got Soros coming in and funding organizations like Black Lives Matter. You have the Marxists successfully taking over Hollywood and our educational institutions. You have the opening of our border and migrants flooding in, because now the policy is not a strong America, but a strong one world government, a strong globalist agenda. So every major superpower that advocates any national sovereignty for itself or others becomes a threat to the agenda of the political elite. And that's why you see these massive campaigns for globalist support of these humanitarian crises on a very selective level. I mean, we know terrible things are happening in Gaza, but terrible things are happening all over every continent, whether it's in China with the camps or whether it's in various nations within Africa. We've seen a genocide, an Armenian genocide of Christians in the last several years. And some journalists go there and they capture it and they write about it, but we see absolutely no policy. I mean, you're more likely to hear from Secretary Blinken the advocacy of gay rights in any miscellaneous African nation. So you're more likely to hear Secretary Blinken criticize African nations for not upholding gay rights in their country than you are to hear Secretary Blinken criticize the genocide of hundreds of thousands of Christians in any other nation, right? And so we have this globalist selective focus and backing of specific humanitarian crises that help catalyze their own agenda. This is clip number 36. Northern Gaza in grip of full-blown famine, UN Food Agency chief says. So you'll see this segment and you'll see this coverage, and it's all true. This place has been carpet bombed, and it is a humanitarian crisis. But why is it that the UN is going in and broadcasting this content, making it go viral so that everybody in the whole international community cares about this crisis while totally disregarding all of the other major crises throughout the world? Clip 36.
It just feels like a ghost town. You can't really believe that people lived here and that this was a city and this was a home filled with life.
We are on a joint UNRWA and WFP mission to Jabalia. The purpose of this mission is an assessment on the need of food in the north, which is why it's critical that our agencies continue to work in partnership.
We're just in Gaza middle area. We've driven through Khan Yunis and Rafah this morning to get here. And it's really unbelievable to see all the destruction. There's craters on the side of the road, buildings that are completely missing walls.
In this war, UNRWA has had 165 facilities damaged or destroyed, which is a huge problem when it comes to the humanitarian operation.
We're currently in the UNRWA Jabalia Distribution Center, and this is really important because at the moment, UNRWA and World Food Program are looking at ways to explore the food distribution in the north.
To deliver food to the community, we need to transport it on trucks to warehouse or distribution centers, safely offload it, and then distribute it to the community. It's simply not possible to do that without proper or intact infrastructure.
As you can see, there's been significant damage during the war.
Bullet holes, walls missing, roofs not intact. It's critical for us to open more facilities and distribute more food. That's the most important thing.
So just like the movie Civil War, you got these globalist organizations like the World Economic Forum or the United Nations that are projected, perceived, promoted as the protagonists in this global story, this conflict. They're ones coming in and saving people and providing aid. And the UN is here to rescue because it inherently combats the notion of national sovereignty. So these globalist organizations have to be the hero, because if any one nation is the hero, then it subconsciously advocates for national sovereignty of that nation. So America is no longer the hero. It's the United Nations that's the hero. And you see other rhetoric coming out that we have to fund Ukraine and beat Russia in this war with Ukraine if we ever hope to fight against and win against China. So now they're making the Ukraine war somehow tangent to a conflict with China, which doesn't exist yet. This is clip number 30 of why we should fund Ukraine, coming out in the context of Zelensky telling his commanders that Ukraine must defeat Russia to join NATO.
If you cannot produce enough of interceptors to help Ukraine win the war against the country that wants to destroy the world order, then how are you going to win in the war against perhaps an enemy who is stronger than Russia? Think two steps ahead. People come up with some most incredible arguments to explain why Ukraine does not deserve to be supported. But the very simple fact is, if you lose in Ukraine, it will have a domino effect, and you will start losing everywhere.
Well, there you have it, folks. You're going to lose the war with China. You're going to lose World War III unless you fund Ukraine. That's the leverage they're trying to pull. And this is all happening in the context of UK vowing to arm Ukraine for as long as it takes and committing $3.7 billion annually to the victory. And this is all in the conflicts of new reports here that data centers hiding in spy country Northern Virginia will need reactors worth of power. So the government is trying to get basically a new nuclear reactor worth of power to its data centers as they've just renewed the unlawful surveillance of Americans in FISA, because they want to spy on you and they want to censor you and they want to attack you while they fund these conflicts overseas and while they catalyze World War III. Because the only way to establish one world government is a world war. And World War III is a necessary condition of their agenda manifest in the world. And while this happens, we see calls for increased censorship here in the United States, whether it pertains to Ukraine or whether it pertains to the conflict between Israel and Gaza. Obviously, the protests want censorship. Obviously, those against the protests want censorship of anti-Semitic rhetoric. And we've got one platform, basically one platform other than Rumble, which will allow freedom of speech, which will allow freedom of thought, which has consistently improved the number of people, increased the number of people accepted onto the platform to say what they have to say, so long as they don't violate the law. And most controversial of those is Nick Fuentes, the infamous Nick Fuentes, who Alex Jones debated on this show, on the Alex Jones show, who I spoke to on the American Journal back on October, I think, 23rd, 2023. This is somebody who's incredibly controversial. He's been allowed back on the platform, and that's how you know that they're going to come after Elon Musk and X as hard as they possibly can over the course of the next 6 months, because they cannot allow freedom of speech to exist anywhere at critical mass. Otherwise, their entire narrative will collapse. Let's run clip number one here of Elijah Schaefer on Timcast debating the Fuentes' admission back onto the platform.
And I think what you said is true. I think that he's actually intellectual. He understands his prognosis. I'm sure you guys disagree, but I don't think that the way he's been painted and the reflection of him has been fair. And I think that adds to a lot of the conspiracy around Jewish people and things, people that try to point out the real problem. And I think he's been pretty accurate early on a lot of diagnoses of things. When they use his followers and what random bots will say on the internet to define what he says, I think that's my point. A lot of the way people are treating this adds to more of the issue, because the way the media presents this issue makes people further think, oh, Jews are in control of the media. It is a Jewish problem. And it becomes more concerning. And I have to be so careful in how I word this. I think whatever has happened is not going to switch back unless powers that be create a large global event like a reconstruction. I think too many people see the problem as a Jewish power problem and not an Israel problem. And I think that's going to be the fastest growing side of the left and the right currently. And the gatekeepers on both sides are not talking with these people. They're shaming them.
They're making it worse.
They're calling them idiots and racists and anti-Semites. And instead of addressing the concerns they have about Jewish power, look, if Jewish power is not there, then prove it and tell them. And you don't have to debate them. Debate me, bro. They don't have to go on your show. You don't have to platform them. You owe them nothing. But please, if these people are wrong, disprove them.
How?
Well, that's not up to me. I'm saying if you're saying they're stupid and they're wrong, you have to prove they're wrong. But by calling them names, you're emboldening them. So if they're dangerous and they're a threat and they're going to cause problems, like, I'm trying to be as serious as I can here because I'm not always a serious guy. I'm retarded too. So it's like hard to explain myself sometimes. But if the gatekeepers on both the left and the right, the establishment media and the establishment media on the right, really believe that these people are disgusting anti-Semites, that they are going to cause a world war, they're going to cause another Holocaust, we don't want to see anybody dead, and that they're tearing apart our country, and they have a very false and vitriolic and disgusting ideology, then can you please do more than calling them anti-Semites and racists and taking Cookie Monster jokes out of context?
All right, folks, we are coming up on a break, and I promise I'm going to get to your calls on the other side. I see Huck, Andrew, Tim, Jimmy, Daryl, Bob, Dave, Bart, Ron, Ethan. I'm going to get to all you guys on the other side. We're going to start taking calls immediately after this break. But before we cut to break, I do want to remind the audience to check out Dr. Jones Naturals at drjonesnaturals.com. Now, what's awesome about Next Level Foundational Energy, which is an amazing product at drjonesnaturals.com, is that it acts differently than a stimulant. So whether you're taking Adderall or using energy drinks or consuming caffeine in abundance, those substances are designed to trick your mind and your brain into thinking that you have energy when you actually don't. And that's why when they wear off, you feel that terrible collapse. Well, the difference about Dr. Jones Naturals Next Level Foundational Energy is that it doesn't just trick your mind into thinking that you have energy so you crash later. It actually gives your body that energy so you can get through the day, so you can get through that workout. And it simultaneously helps Alex Jones. It helps his family, who we know have been under relentless attack from the globalists, from the New World Order, from the deep state for years now. So please visit drjonesnaturals.com. That's drjonesnaturals.com. And check out Next Level Foundational Energy. I guarantee that you'll love it. It will light you up like a Christmas tree. And it helps support Alex Jones and his family, who have been under relentless attack, fighting for freedom of speech and truth, especially now at a time when those things are more important than ever before in our history. So stick with us, folks. Your call's on the other side. Welcome back to Sunday Night Live, folks. I am Chase Geiser, your host this evening, and we are going to be taking calls for the remainder of the show over the course of the next hour. And I believe there's going to be an amazing airing of the next 30 Minutes episode hosted by Owen Schroyer. As you know, Owen Schroyer has started a new podcast called 30 Minutes. It's half as long and twice as good as 60 Minutes. And there's going to be a great episode coming up immediately after this broadcast in exactly 1 hour. Let's dive in and go straight to calls. I want to hear from Huck in California. Huck, what is on your mind?
A lot of fun with their at your studio and also out in the audience, Chase. When the COVID thing first broke, I did tons of research on it. When I read Bobby Kennedy's book, I said, man, this stuff should be in a comic book. Well, it just happens. I used to be a professional comic book writer. I worked for a very famous company I don't want to really mention on the air.
DC.
Connected with this. And I wrote a series of 9 comic books, the scripts for them. And already I've got one of them that's posted online. I have an artist, and we're looking for more artists, by the way, if there's some experienced comic book artists. Anyways, the comic's called Lockdown Boogie, and you can find it by going on X and putting Lockdown Boogie into the two words, Lockdown and Boogie into the search bar, or you can go directly to Lockdown Boogie Comic at substack.com.
Well, Huff, thank you so much for mentioning that. And, you know, your call reminds me of a very important point. This is how we win the info war. It's about all the listeners and all the people engaging and doing whatever their talent is, whatever their calling is, whatever their skill is, in a way that tells the truth, broadcasts the truth, and perpetuates the type of culture and philosophy and mentality that we need in order to win this. So whether you're a comic book artist or an author, or you want to make documentaries, or you simply want to make short clips and go viral on social media, whatever it is that is your talent, finding a way to use that talent to fight the new world order is how we win the information war. So Alex Jones famously started this company decades ago and has exercised his talent for 30 years now on air, over 30 years, which is broadcasting. He's the most talented person I've ever seen speak to millions of people at once. And not everybody can be Alex Jones. I wish I could. I can't do it. I can be good, but I can't be that. He's just a next level. And so whatever it is that is your calling, whatever it is that is your talent or your passion, even if you're not good at it, just practice it in the name of truth, in the name of Western culture, in the name of winning the info war, and that will add up. That is how you enlist as a soldier in the info war to win against the New World Order. Huck, thank you. Andrew in New Jersey. Andrew, what is on your mind?
Great advice, and just want to say quick, the comic book artist, I worked at the Newark Museum, and they were cool. Like, we had the exhibit. They were like cool, nerdy types. They were not smug. Like, the regular artists were smug types. But the comic book, they were like free, you know, free loving, happy, go lucky guys. But I want to say quick on Zelensky, he contradicts himself. He said, you have to be ready. You have to think ahead to be prepared for the opponent. Well, you weren't prepared for Russia. So he's contradicting. And at Columbia University before the riots, like probably 4 months ago, I was there for C-SPAN, and it was a pro-Ukrainian author, and they said the U.S. only gave Ukraine either 73 or 93 Stinger missiles. And I remember you and I spoke about that, and it's like the crowd didn't like that. But it's like, well, they're a sovereign nation. They should build their own. And if they can't, we'll sell them to them at cost or at 1%, you know, profit. So they're not a sovereign nation, like you said, if they rely on other nations for their defense. And they're an affluent nation, too. They have industry and they have agriculture. So they're not even like a third world nation that's in poverty. So there's no excuse for their corruption. You know, they're corrupt and it's their own fault that they're not prepared. It's not our fault. That's like if your neighbor is corrupt and they don't work and they blame you for not paying their mortgage. But anyway, quick, AOC, she's fake. She's really from Westchester. That's why she has the Valley Girl accent. Her grandmother was from the Bronx. And Mark Hamill, they always repeat the same lie about jobs created under Biden, but those were COVID lockdowns that were reopened. And we know inflation blocking our oil production and natural gas helps cause inflation, which Biden did. And lastly, on Whoopi, she's actually the racist, like you're pointing out economically, but also by blocking school choice, that's very racist. And I got to see it firsthand. The school I went to, there were disproportionately more African-American kids in the lower level classes where we mostly didn't get any education. Had myself and my parents and the black parents, if they could accept us to the Catholic school or to the other private school, you know, we would have got a vastly better. My friend said he went to Seton Hall Prep, which is the Catholic school, for one semester or two, I think one or two. And he said he learned more in those two semesters than all 4 years at Columbia High School at, you know, the public school.
Well, so it used to be that you had to go to a higher education institution in order to get an education. But nowadays, with the internet and all the resources that exist, everything's open source. I mean, even MIT courses, you can just view them online. You don't actually need to go to a higher education institution to get an education. You just need to go to these institutions in order to get a diploma. So you have to ask yourself, what is more important? Is the education itself more important, or is the diploma what is actually important? And the diploma mentality is, I'm going to get certified so that an employer is more comfortable hiring me, regardless of whether or not I know what I'm doing. The correct American mentality is, I am going to bring a skill or knowledge or value to the table, and I'm going to convince the employer that I have that regardless of my credentials, and then they're going to hire me to kick butt, right? And so what's happened is we have shifted from a society that relies on institutions for knowledge and wisdom to one that doesn't. And we're seeing these institutions have transformed from educational institutions to indoctrination institutions, right? So they're trying to get you to send your kids to higher education, to college, so they can indoctrinate them when they don't, those kids don't even need to go there to learn what they need to learn in order to be successful. When they go there, they frankly graduate without the knowledge or the skills necessary to do the job that they majored in. And then they wind up pursuing a career in some other field. I can't remember what the statistic is, but it's I believe it's a majority of people who graduate from college don't actually do what they studied at college. And I understand these are formative years and it's important to have that experience where you can find yourself for 4 years, but nobody going to college, not nobody, but the vast majority of students going to college are not doing the work that needs to be done in order to network and meet people in the community wherever they're going to school so that they can be set up for success after they graduate. So it's a total waste of money. And because it's a waste of money, there's been so much pressure basically for refunds, which is the cancellation of all student debt. All these students are so miffed that they all owe all this money for an education, quote, education, that doesn't even work. And that's why they're getting their money back. They're getting their money back because they got ripped off. And that's why there's so much political pressure for this. And so, you know, you got to figure out what you're going to do with your kids. My kids are 3 and 1 years old, and my parents and my in-laws are encouraging me to save up for their college fund. But I've got half a mind to just figure out a way to get these kids educated without sending them away at all, because these institutions only corrupt these students without actually teaching them anything meaningful. I mean, if Marxists are going to invest themselves and in infect all of these institutions, then I'm not going to send my kids there to get infected by that. Thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it. Let's go to Tim in Michigan. Tim, what is on your mind?
Hey, Chase, can you hear me all right?
You sound great.
Hey, that's fantastic. Hey, there's a few things that I want to talk about, but okay, there's something that's been on my mind. And I want to talk about, first of all, the products, and then I want to talk about what's going on here in Michigan. And also, I mentioned to the screener that I want to talk about Daniel 9:25. But first of all, do you like peaches?
Do I like peaches?
Yeah, you like peaches?
Yeah.
Okay. I know this seems a little off, but this is about the product.
Okay.
Some years ago, I live here in Michigan, and you go to a big box store and you buy a peach, and there's no flavor. It just tastes like you're eating, like, hard paste.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at a friend's house, and there was a little old Michigan peach tree just sitting outside of their front door. And tiny. Tiny little peaches. And I was like, man, I'm going to eat a peach. So I pulled one off and I ate it and my head exploded. It was like, this is what a peach is supposed to taste
like. Yeah, and they're tiny because they're not infected with all those GMOs.
Yeah, you know, I mean, for whatever reason, it was just unbelievably delicious.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I want to say about products at InfoWars. I didn't realize what I was missing in my life until I started taking a lot of things. I'm almost 60 years old. I'm going to be 58 in July. And I'm a martial artist. I've got a couple of black belt levels. And I tested it at 50, hurt my knee. I started taking the bodies. It took the inflammation out of my knee. I was able to continue practicing. Super male vitality is amazing. You feel it in your temporal lobe almost immediately under the tongue, and the testosterone boost is completely off the chart. And you were mentioning the Dr. Jones Naturals, and that's where you'll find that.
Yeah, the next level foundational energy too.
Yeah, it's completely. I haven't had that yet. I mean, to order that.
That'll light you up like a Christmas tree. Don't take it too late in the day. You won't be able to sleep.
It's amazing. So anyway, kind of getting on to the Daniel 9:25.
Huh?
If you read in that, and you guys, actually, it's really funny because I brought this up to my pastor today about Daniel 9:25. You posted an article for Netanyahu gave a speech today about them rebuilding Israel.
Yep, it's right here on the overhead cam. Netanyahu unveils utopian plan for Gaza 2035.
Okay, so if everybody that's listening can go to Daniel 9:25 and read, and this is something I found just some days ago, but I'm just going to read the angel Gabriel is speaking to Daniel, and it's 25, maybe 26. It will be rebuilt with streets and a trench, but in times with trouble. So basically, the angel Gabriel is telling Daniel of his vision or of the end times that there's going to be a trench. And, you know, in my version, at least I look down and it says a trench can mean a moat or a conduit for water. And this basically spells out what's going to happen in Israel and what we've been reading on InfoWars, you know, with them, you know, for the last 50 years.
How did you come across Daniel 9:25? Because that really does seem to tie in with today's news. Did you just happen to remember it?
I'm sorry?
Did you just happen to remember Daniel 9:25? It's amazing how that verse ties in.
No, it was actually, I've been reading Daniel for church, and I brought this up to my pastor, and we're going into a whole section next week about Revelation, and Daniel is a big part of that, because a lot of the dreams and things that he had were translated from the angels about the end times and also about the current times.
Wow, that's amazing stuff.
It's pretty interesting. You can bring that up on your own.
Yeah, absolutely. But,
also, another thing I wanted to bring up was here in Michigan, I'm a delivery driver, and I drive all over the west side of Michigan. And Gretchen Whitmer, this ties into another InfoWars article or another one of your videos. Mm-hmm. She's dragging fiber optic cable all over the place for 5G. She's made a commitment to make sure everybody has 5G available to them. And this is like out in the sticks. I'm seeing cameras and all sorts of things popping up. And when you relate it to what's going on with the video, and it was the Reese report. Greg Reese was talking about the what are those called? In the vaccine.
Oh, the mRNA, the spike proteins?
Yeah, no, it was rather the...
like the chips?
Darn it. Sorry, I can't think of the hydro blah, blah, blah.
That's okay.
Where they had a clamshell with the IP address in it, and you could release whatever you want. And he actually had the people up there speaking about it. Well, I'm looking at this happening, and I'm thinking, okay, well, if you want to have a pandemic and you want to release anybody that's had these vaccines and create all sorts of issues out in the sticks, you can lock people down easily like that. So that's just another thing that I'm thinking about. It's like they're putting this 5G up everywhere, and I'm talking out in farm country.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely scary when there's so much universal backing of any technology or infrastructure, and then the censorship of any criticism of that technology. And I haven't done the deep dive yet on 5G. It seems like studies show that these frequencies can be harmful and damage DNA, which obviously catalyzes and causes cancer. We've seen studies and research that suggests that maybe having your cell phone up against your ear for more than 14 minutes a day can cause brain tumors. I don't know what's true or what's not, but I definitely don't trust the system and this infrastructure in place. Tim, I'm really glad that you called. Thank you. That was an awesome call that touched on so many things. And thank you for saying nice things about our products. It really is true that these products at InfoWarsStore.com and DrJonesNaturals.com are next level and work. I wasn't somebody who believed in supplements really before I started working here, and they were laying around. I just happened to start taking some of them, like Brain Force and Turbo Force, and it just blew my mind. Next up, let's talk to Jimmy in Connecticut. Jimmy, you've been waiting patiently. What's on your mind?
Hey, Chase. How you doing, man?
Good, man.
Hey, dude. I'm just doing more or less a forward, something that possibly could be set up this week. Based on all the stuff that you were talking about tonight, something that's been lost in the sauce here, obviously with Donald Trump and obviously the stuff that's going overseas. Mm-hmm. A lot of people I've been noticing in your Twitter comments have been talking about a lawsuit possibly between Alex, this Corey T. Skolanka, and Donald Trump possibly suing the government. I don't know what it's really about. I read into the cases here. Obviously, it's about Alex's cases and stuff, but I was wondering if possibly this week for a big show, if Norm Pattis, Robert Barnes could come together for almost like a guest host to feature something on not only the Jones defendants, but also all the defendants in all these cases that could come against the U.S. government. I think it would be a massive class action lawsuit that would be probably more uplifting than anybody would ever imagine is the fact that based on the revelations from O'Keefe Media Group in the week, 2 weeks, that something could spurriate from this because I feel I understand Alex has been under extreme pressure.
Well, Jimmy, let me just cut in. I totally agree with your sentiment, and I appreciate that call. Obviously, all of this legal stuff going on is incredibly sensitive, so I don't want to elaborate too much about it on air. But I agree with your sentiment. I hope that Alex pursues lawsuits against the CIA and the deep state because of these revelations from O'Keefe Media Group. And I can tell you this with confidence that as soon as Jones is ready, he will broadcast and share any information he has about next steps and developments, but it's not really appropriate for me to foreshadow that or give any clues or hints about that. But I think this last week he mentioned a couple of times that he's going to give a major update this coming week on air regarding some of the developments in terms of the lawfare that he's been experiencing. But I'm going to leave it at that, Jimmy. I do appreciate your call though. And I love you, brother. Let's go to Daryl in North Carolina. Daryl, what's on your mind?
Hey, Chase, can you hear me?
Yeah, you sound great.
Okay. Hey, I wanted to talk about you started off the show with Mark Hamill and Karine Jean-Pierre.
Yep.
Right? Okay, so mid-90s, personal story here. I was an aspiring actor in Hollywood, an extra making $150 a day, and I filmed a PC game called Wing Commander 3 with Mark Hamill. And we didn't know Mark Hamill was going to be in it. After about 2 or 3 days, the director gets us all around and says, hey, I got a surprise for you guys. The star of the game is here. He walks in, and we're just starstruck, man. All of us just, you know,
of course.
Luke Skywalker.
Of course,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's my most exciting Hollywood story. Once I met him, I was done with Hollywood because he was cool. I mean, and let me tell you something about Mark Hamill. The feeling I got after having lunches with him and talking with him is he was a guy who was all about his family. He was a man who wants to provide for his children, and he'll do whatever it takes to provide for his children. So this conference with Karine Jean-Pierre, I have a feeling he got an offer he couldn't refuse, and he wanted to provide for his family. And let me tell you something.
I think you're right.
Luke Skywalker's the real deal, and from my personal experience in the mid-90s, and I just wanted to call in and
look, I'm sure he's a nice guy. I'm sure a lot of these leftists are fun to hang out with. And frankly, back in the 90s, the political climate wasn't so tense that it was really a problem hanging out with people of different beliefs. My only criticism of him is that he's advocating for a politician who is obviously evil and wrong about everything and not even cognizant of what he's doing. I mean, this is a person that's not aware. So I'm not trying to bash Mark Hamill's character. I am trying to simply make a mockery of the Biden administration having to resort to paying or recruiting celebrities to create the perception that the Biden administration is popular when it's not. Mark Hamill is popular, not the Biden administration. I understand that he's an actor and that he's an incredibly talented actor at that, but just because he's an actor doesn't mean that he has any weight or credibility or that this isn't absolutely silly. What do you think about that comeback, Daryl? And I respect what you said too.
You're right. You're totally right. I agree with you 100%, but if you watch it again, just imagine a man, and you're a man who is a husband and a father.
Yep.
Imagine you get an offer you can't refuse, and all you think about is your kid, all right? And all you have to do is get out there and say, hey, Joe Biden's cool. You're going to do it, dude. You know you're going to do it.
I wouldn't do the Joe Biden one, but I think the Mark Hamill example is, I think Mark Hamill was already a Biden supporter, so he was willing to get paid by Biden to do this kind of thing. But I guarantee you 100%, no matter how much money they gave me, I would not pretend to like Joe Biden.
And Chase, one more thing.
Sure, go ahead.
I love your dude. I love your analysis. I love your passion. I'm so happy that InfoWars has you. I think they're lucky.
Thank you.
And I want to say one thing about you is your IQ is clearly off the chart. And I wouldn't want to compare an IQ with you. It would be like, I don't know, comparing penis size with Shaq. I don't want to do it.
That's a nice thing to say.
That's it.
Well, thank you, Daryl. I appreciate it. All right. Bob in Utah, founding fathers. What's on your mind?
Hi, Chase.
Hey, man.
I'm just amazed at the founding fathers because they understood human nature.
Go ahead.
Everybody wants a little more. This one guy said, in the people today, you know, on the planet Earth, one person out of every 200 were directly related to Genghis Khan.
Well, and you know what's crazy about that is it's like some astronomical amount of the population is related to Genghis Khan because he did so much invading and he populated the Earth very seriously and intentionally. And, you know, I don't advocate for invading countries and just populating the Earth, but I do advocate for the importance that it is to have children and perpetuate your worldview and your values that way. And one of the biggest mistakes that we've made here in the United States is we, as Native Americans, people born here into American families with American values, became so cautious about our finances and our future and our retirement and the quality of life that we want to live that we chose ourselves over our unborn children. And as a result of that, we are not reproducing as we should be reproducing. And, you know, I believe in things like the Great Replacement Theory, the replacement migration conspiracy theory. I think that's true. But that conspiracy theory can only work if the people who are already here just stop having children. And they want you to stop having children. And they want you to get abortions. And they want you to modify yourself and indulge in this transhumanism and just suffer and struggle because they know that the poorer the middle class is, the fewer children the middle class will have. And when the middle class is eradicated, that's when the government can come in and exact total control over all people. Bob, thank you for your call. I appreciate that. Dave in Arizona. Dave, what's on your mind?
Appreciate the opportunity to talk to you, Chase.
You're welcome.
So everything all the previous callers have said has been spot on, and this is all the Marxist way. And when you go back to the population decline, this happened to me back in the 90s. I graduated from Penn State in 93, and I left. I got out of there because the Midwest had been hollowed out. The Marxists knew if they could steal our industries, mm-hmm. and then they put such a malaise on the population. Remember the opioid crisis back in Ohio? That happened because people were without hope. It was the fentanyl of 30 years ago. It was imported to disrupt our families. And the CCP has mastered this. They've gotten our cultural elites, the establishment class, I call them, to buy into Operation Chaos. And we identified this early on. I believe it was May 25th when we watched Somaliopolis burn, that they were going to, you know, activate Antifa and BLM to burn down our country. Because once they do that, they can convince people to stay home, to not be politically active, to not go out into the city town square, and even the digital town square, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm still not back on Twix because I've got 17,000 research posts that Elon's administrators won't let me back into. You know, it's crazy, right? Everybody else is back on the platform, but us true patriots that got called on J8 with President Trump, we're still not back on there because they won't let us back in the digital town square. So I'm afraid that 2024, I'm politically active. We go to events every week, big social media presence on everything I can get on. But I think 2024 is going to be Tammany Hall all over again. It's not the votes or the voters that matter. It's the vote counters. And we saw that here in 2022 mm-hmm. in State 48, where they shut down 3 out of 5 election centers. So we couldn't vote for Kerry Lake. I feel very strongly they'll never let another America First candidate win again. They'll use as many algorithms and cheat 30 ways a Sunday to prevent our voices and votes to be heard and counted. It's not about President Trump. It's about we the people. Thanks for letting me ramble a bit.
No, Dave, those are great points. And I don't disagree with anything that you said, but the issue I take with that thought process is it discourages people from at least trying, right? There's a great line in the movie Braveheart, where they're arguing about whether to go into battle. And this is when William Wallace was a kid and he's just overhearing his dad and the other elders of the community argue about whether to fight the Brits. And the point comes up that we can't beat them. And the counterpoint is we don't have to beat them, just fight them. And obviously we need to beat them. But by saying it's impossible or thinking along the lines that it's impossible now, that discourages the behavior which otherwise could put us over the threshold of victory, namely getting active, participating, actually voting. There are so many people I've heard from, they're like, I don't want to vote because the whole thing's rigged anyway. Well, then why is it that Donald Trump is campaigning so hard? I mean, he seems to think that a victory is possible. And I agree with you that there's going to be cheating and corruption and lying and dishonesty. That's something that's existed in our elections for at least 100 years to some extent. I mean, you can watch the show Mad Men, and there's this scene where he says, hey, well, yeah, Nixon would have won, too, if every corpse in Cook County didn't vote for JFK. I mean, voter fraud has been something that's been discussed for at least 100 years in this country, and it's existed in every election, especially in major cities that are mob-controlled or Democrat-controlled. Yes, there's no doubt that they're going to cheat, but there are limits. There is a limit to the efficacy and the abilities and the capabilities of their cheating. I believe that they cheated in 2016 as well as 2020, but the victory was such a landslide in 2016 that it wasn't enough to bring a victory for Clinton. And yes, they're gonna cheat this fall, but if Trump believes that there is hope for a victory, then I do too, frankly. And I'm not somebody who wants to just blindly trust Trump, but he's in the know. He understands the extent of this cheating. He understands the extent of this corruption. He's seen it before. His eyes are open now that he's been touched by the swamp in a way that he wasn't before he came into office. And if he thinks that he can win, then I believe that we can win. And so it's important that we vote, that we show up, despite the fact that we know that they're going to cheat, because we have to win by an unfair margin. We have to win by a disproportionate amount. It's handicapped. It's unfair. The scale is tipped in their favor. But if we have such unity around the America First movement, around a populist movement for a populist president, and if we awaken the masses of people who have been disenfranchised and frankly betrayed by the leftists for the last decades who have exploited the most vulnerable among us, then we can win no matter how hard they try to cheat. We can have total victory this fall, in my opinion, folks. We're going to start taking your calls again on the other side. Stay tuned through this break. All right, folks, it is Sunday Night Live. I am Chase Geiser, and for the next 27 minutes, we are going to be taking your calls. A lot of great callers tonight. I just want to say thank you to every single person who called in and calls in, because it is inspiring to hear so much support from InfoWarriors out there, and it's so important that we have a dialogue and actually engage with one another. One of the things that makes InfoWars so special as it compares to other mainstream media outlets is these deep state outlets that are backed by the intelligence community, they just project their propaganda upon you. They just project top down talking points that they want you to believe, that they want to brainwash the population with, the world with. And they never actually take calls or risk any improvisation. Everything is scripted and pre-programmed, and taking calls is dangerous for them because they don't know what callers are going to say, and they don't know how to respond spontaneously because they don't actually have any values or principles or ideals of their own. They just say talking points, and how are you supposed to respond spontaneously to someone's thoughts or opinions if you're not sure whether or not your thoughts or opinions are in line with the narrative that you've been told to project? So it's so special here at InfoWars that we're able to take your calls and have that exchange, that dialogue. Let's go to Bart in Georgia. Bart, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I want to talk about Sharia law and how it is incompatible with freedom in America.
Okay.
An example is a woman converting to Islam is like a black person converting to slavery. Secondly, what does radical Islam and the Biden regime have in common? Feminine genital mutilation. And if it's going to be used for a leftist overthrow, and if they keep coming, we will be conquered. They must be stopped. So we got to all get out and vote and get Trump in.
Outstanding points there, Bart. And this kind of ties into what we were talking about at the end of the last segment with this replacement migration. Obviously, freedom of religion is a sacred right. And I don't advocate for any restrictions on the freedom of religion. But I agree with Bart that Sharia law is incompatible with Americanism. It's a religion as a form of government. And I know separation of church and state is not something that's constitutional. It's just a principle that was in letters. But we have to enact policies, not that restrict the practice of religion here in the United States, but that restrict the influx of anti-American ideals into our country. And they call it Islamophobia or xenophobia whenever Trump or other politicians say that we need to shut down the border from these countries and stop taking immigrants from these countries until we figure out what's going on. But the fact of the matter is, you should not be allowed to become a citizen of the United States of America if you do not believe in American ideals, if you do not speak the English language, and if you are not here to genuinely assimilate to American Western culture. So I don't think we should shut down mosques or silence people that advocate for Sharia law. I believe in freedom of speech and freedom of religion in this country, but we should have policies at the highest levels of our country that keep those who would erode our culture, our way of life, our philosophy, and the very essence of freedom itself from existing in our nation. Because there is no further west to go. And if freedom dies here in the United States of America, then it is dead in the world until the New World Order collapses, which is inevitable, whether it's in 10 years or in 1,000 years. There will be no freedom if there isn't freedom in the United States of America until the New World Order collapses and some other civilization can be rebuilt on top of the ashes. So, Bart, thanks for that call. Ron in Florida. Ron, what's on your mind?
Hey, a couple things real quick. First of all, hey, I sent a shirt to own, two shirts, one for hopefully you guys will find and send back. It has to do with the Trump trial in New York. And I sent it to own because I've called several times for shows about other things, and he's the only one I've been able to get lucky enough to get through to.
Okay.
Now, a couple things. Trump in New York will be found not guilty or at worst a hung jury. And I think that because in New York they see what's happening. I think they're going to tell Alvin Bragg to go do himself, and Trump will be found not guilty, and then they'll make some kind of movie of the Trump 12. And then there's no more white supremacy. It's Jew supremacy. So, you know, they got to change the narrative on all these NBC talk shows and all them other talk shows now. There's no more white supremacy. It's Jew supremacy.
Well, thank you for your call. I appreciate that call, Ron. I don't believe in the conspiracy theories around like a Jewish takeover of the world. I believe that it's a problem that Zionism exists in our institutions, regardless of whether the people who are Zionists are Jewish or not, or any other race. It's a problem when there is a philosophy that puts any other nation before our own, when that philosophy exists at the highest levels of all of our institutions. So it's not just Zionism that's problematic. Another example would be Marxism. Marxism has taken over Hollywood. Marxism has taken over all of our higher education institutions. We see the massive indoctrination of our students and children and faculties, frankly, and just basically everyone. Our entire population has been indoctrinated by Marxism through these institutions. They don't even call it Marxism anymore, really. They call it things like critical theory, or they use other terms like systemic racism. These are all outshoots, cutouts of Marxism. And so, yes, I agree that the philosophy and advocacy for Zionism is something that's inherently incompatible with America First, unless you're a Zionist who's like, yeah, Zionism, but not if it hurts America. Then I guess that would be something that may theoretically be compatible, but it's not the immutable characteristics or the race or the religion of people at our higher institutions, in all of our institutions, that's causing this problem. It is the philosophies and beliefs of these people that is causing the problem. So I'm not somebody that's ready to go down the road of suggesting that we have a, quote, Jewish problem. But I do explicitly have a problem with Zionism in the highest halls of power in our country and the advocacy for any other country, whether it's Ukraine, Taiwan, or Israel, ahead of the interests and needs of the American people in America. And I also have a very serious issue when the likes of Speaker Johnson come out, or when the likes of Greg Abbott come out and say that we need to imprison all of these protesters. I disagree with the protesters. Are you talking about imprisoning protesters and that these people need to be expelled from these institutions and that these universities need to be fined for violating the anti-discrimination laws in our country if they have students that protest using anti-Semitic remarks? It is legal. It is allowed in this country to have racist ideas and racist ideals. That is something that is protected by the First Amendment of the United States. You can be a racist, outspoken. You can't discriminate in who you hire. You can't discriminate formally in your institutions and your organizations. That's illegal because that's actually applying racism in policy. But for you to express that you believe something, regardless of how hateful it is or wrong it is or disgusting or gross it is, the ability for you to express that idea is sacred. I'm somebody who absolutely hates communism in every way that it's ever manifest. I think it's the most dangerous philosophy that has ever existed in the history of mankind. But if you want to have a pro-communist protest on campus and you want to fly the hammer and sickle around on campus, then I would fight for your right to do that. I would fight against you. I would counter-protest. I would argue against you and show you how ridiculous you were and gripe about it on air. I would absolutely oppose that. But the fact that we would shut these protests down legally, the problem is when you create policies that allow for the censorship and arrest of people just because of their ideas, those policies always come back around to bite you. And it's not just the communists or the anti-Semites that suffer the consequences of bad policy, but it will come around to the capitalists or the white people or whatever we are, or the patriots. So we have to be very careful that we fight for the rights of these people to protest on these campuses while simultaneously disavowing all the BS associated with them. And we have to be careful about ascribing the sins of a few people to an entire group as well, in my opinion. Ethan from Washington State, what's on your mind, Ethan? Are you there? Can you hear me? Looks like we might have lost Ethan. Let's go straight to Jefferson in Virginia. Jefferson, what's on your mind?
Hey, Chase. I feel bad for Ethan not getting on.
That's okay. I think he hung up.
Thanks for coming to me. This modern monetary theory is really just musical chairs for people that are halfway up the pyramid, and the rest of us are too far below to even get anywhere near the chairs.
What do you mean by that? I don't quite understand.
Well, access to the capital that's being printed out of thin air
is
sort of the Cantillon effect, where the people high enough up on the pyramid get to use the money before it loses its value.
Yes.
So they get to enrich themselves, and they get to take the chairs, which is basically false title to all the assets of the country, and the rest of us are sort of just left wallowing in the detritus of the failed system that's going to collapse anyway. But they're going to get to retain their title to the resources and the assets in the end. When this whole reset happens, the rich will still be rich and the rest of us will be poorer than ever. But it's just amazing that Jared Bernstein couldn't even figure out what a bond was and whether that's lending money or giving money away. It was just amazing to see him fumble.
The chair of the Economic Council?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're just people that just are there to give talking points to the public anyway. They're not really supposed to understand what they're talking about in any detail.
Sure.
It reminds me of that documentary on the derivatives market meltdown, where that one guy from the Federal Reserve could not tell you what a derivative was.
Mm-hmm.
He took the same tactic of just fumbling and could never explain that a derivative is just a bet on another bet, really. I mean, it's not that hard to explain. But anyway, it's been a good show. I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I was telling Daria, if we had $170 billion printed out of thin air for us to use domestically, I don't think we have a priority list of what would be the most effective thing to put it to use doing. And I was saying the thing we should be most important to us to do with the money, if we had it, to spend on domestic exercises would be to harden the electrical grid and to build the transformers we need if there's an EMP attack to replace the ones that would get fried. I don't know how many Americans would be put to work.
That's a great point. There's so many opportunities for legitimate uses of that kind of money. But the problem is if they harden our electrical grid and our communications and bolster the defenses against EMP attacks and solar flares or whatever else they want to accuse, then it wouldn't be reasonable for us to believe them when those things happen, when they blame them on Russia or China. So now they have the opportunity to allow these things to happen and use those crises as an excuse to usher in policies that mitigate our rights further.
Yeah, they got us over a barrel. It's amazing what we have to try to undo peacefully, that really we shouldn't have to be relying on peaceful means to stop them from doing to us. They're torturing us, 1,000 cuts in 100 different ways.
Absolutely. Jefferson, always a pleasure to speak to you, man. Call back anytime. Mark in California. Mark, what's on your mind?
Yeah, well, first of all, David Barton spoke at our church this morning in Calvary Chapel, San Jose. And if you go there, you can listen to his sermon. He really he tells us the good, bad, and the ugly of our history in relation to, you know, the Constitution and the Bible. So let's go to Calvary Chapel there in San Jose. But in regards to Daniel chapter 9, my friend Gregory, who's too humble to call in, has taught me everything he knows, and he's actually the foremost authority on Daniel chapter 9. So I was wondering if you have any questions.
You know, I don't have any questions about Daniel chapter 9 because it's been a long time since I've read the book of Daniel, so I'm not in a position to ask any questions about that. But Mark, I appreciate your call. Stevie in San Francisco. Stevie, what is on your mind?
I'm going to tell you what's on my mind. The only thing un-American I'm hearing is the constant parade of attacks by your foul-mouthed, flea-bitten listeners against our noble president. I am a Biden believer. And here's what's going to go down in 24. Biden's going to walk away again, wiping the floor with Trump like he did in 2020, because America believes in Biden. Hollywood believes in Biden, like Mark Hamill. And we all know that Trump is going to try to cheat, but he's going to go down in flames. And all I hear is the anger and the bitter in your alcoholic listeners' voices as they have to come to terms with the end of white, cisgendered Christian America. As we rise, the pink-haired warriors, the non-binary warriors, the transgenders, we're rising, and we're going to sweep you aside for a new dawn in this country. What do you got to say about that, Owen?
Keep going. It only helps.
Well, I want to talk right to your listeners right now. The frightened middle-aged white man clinging to his guns and his religion and his money and his privilege. Get ready, baby, because pretty soon you will be swept aside in the new order of things. And you know what that new order is? It's going to be a beautiful, wonderful utopia where we all come together and live together. And yes, there will be communism. Yes, there will be Sharia law, because you don't understand. Queers for Palestine, together forever strong. We are coming together in a coalition, one big, great big coalition that will win the day. And in 2024, when you're all crying, when you're all just so broken up because you've lost again, you're going to understand. It's a new dawn in America with a rainbow, a transgender rainbow sweeping across the land to sweep you aside into obscurity. What do you think about that?
Please expand on that a little bit.
Well, what I'm saying is the time of the white cisgendered man is over. Your privilege card has been revoked. You will accept the new refugees, the new Americans. And here's the secret. Even if there's a cheating going on, it doesn't matter because we won anyway. We're in charge. We tell you what to do. So get ready. Get ready to give up your guns, give up your gold, give up your privilege, and accept the way things are now. The pink-haired warriors are here. And we're not going anywhere. You will not legislate us out of existence. You will not put us back in the closet, and we will not be quiet. Okay? If we want to protest for free Palestine, then we'll do it from the river to the sea. Palestine and America will be free from your oppressive grip that you've had on us. And tell you what, I'm a Biden believer. When Biden smiles, the sun shines. When he weeps, the rain falls. His strong hands lift up the oppressed, and his foot stomps on the white supremacist. So this is how it's going to go down in 24. Joe Biden's going to be back for 4 more years, and then Kamala Harris for 8, and then Gavin Newsom. What do you think about that?
Wonderful. Thank you, Stevie, for your call. Stephen in Florida. Stephen, what is on your mind?
Yeah, hey, good evening, Chase. Well, I was going to call in and talk about this hate speech bill, this anti-Semitic bill.
Uh-huh.
But I want to follow up on your last caller.
You didn't agree?
Well, let me put it this way, okay? I'm going to do a takeoff. It's a cover of an old Beach Boys song, so here goes. Well, LGBTQRSTUVWXYZ, ABCDEFGHIJKLMNOP. The
Recipe is what the aim has been about. Predatory pervert pedophile.
Okay, Stephen. Let's get into the anti-Semitism, though. It's pretty funny, but what did you have to think about that?
Yeah, so here's what I wanted to say about it. Okay, I see this as extremely dangerous, and here's why. Look, first of all, you know, Mike Adams keeps using the term, oh, you're a Christian Zionist, okay? Mm-hmm. I support Israel from the biblical standpoint that God gave promises to Abraham and his descendants. I understand there's Jews that are not Jews, Khazarians, Talmudic, whatever you want to call them, okay? But here's the thing with this anti-Semitism bill. Okay, according to this bill, I'm going to quote from this, okay? In Acts chapter 2, this is Peter preaching on the day of Pentecost. Now, Peter is as Orthodox a Jew as you can get. And he said this to his nation of Israel. He told them that they had slew the Son of God. They killed the Son of God. And then again in Acts chapter 3, ye denied the Holy One and the just and desired a murder to be granted you and killed the Prince of Life whom God hath raised from the dead. And then preaching to the Jewish Sanhedrin council, he also said that they had the God of our fathers raised up Jesus, whom ye slew and hanged on a tree. So what I'm saying with this anti-Semitism law that basically is going to criminalize what I just read to you, if you say that the Jews killed Jesus, and I understand, you know, Hitler did this for a totally different reason. He, you know, pegged the Jews to promote his selfish agenda. That's not what I'm doing. I'm stating the fact of history in the Bible. And what I'm saying is that if Peter was alive today, these people would want his blood for saying what is a biblical fact. And the thing is, though, it's not just the Jews. The Romans were all guilty of the blood of the Son of God. But the point is, the Jews are the ones specifically that said, we have no king but Caesar, his blood be on us and our children. And so I'm not going to fail to preach that because that's part of the gospel. And so, but what I'm saying is, I see this anti-Semitism bill that a lot of these so-called conservatives and even Christians
it's a violation of your freedom of religion.
Very dangerous.
Yeah, it's a violation. I don't think I think the Supreme Court would shoot it down. It's just I can't believe that issues like it like this make it through Congress. They get wild amounts of support in the House of Representatives. They get wild amounts of support in the Senate, and it's so obvious that it's just going to immediately get shut down by the Supreme Court, certainly the Supreme Court as it stands, because it's a violation of freedom of religion to criminalize people stating what they believe, especially when it's straight from a religious text. And yes, I understand that the people who were responsible for the crucifixion of Jesus were Jewish. I don't agree that it was the Jews who killed Jesus. I think that the people who killed him were Jewish, but it wasn't because they were Jewish. They just happened to be Jewish. I mean, most of his disciples, if not all of them, were Jewish too. So you could also say that, oh, you know, the Jews supported Jesus if you look at it that way. So I don't even necessarily agree with the notion, quote, that the Jews killed Jesus, but it is absolutely obvious in the Bible that the people responsible for the crucifixion of Jesus were Jewish. And to make stating that obvious fact from the text illegal is a violation of not only your right to freedom of speech, but your freedom of religion as well. And so I think some people take it too far and they use it to back up anti-Semitic arguments that I disagree with. But yes, it's very obvious that this anti-Semitism bill is a violation of several major rights that are protected by the Constitution of the United States of America. Stephen, I'm so glad that you called. Thank you for that call. Let's pop over for the last couple of minutes to Sue in Michigan. Sue, what is on your mind?
I just want to say we're going from the petrodollar to a health, food, and water cybersecurity dollar. Hmm. And I think Palestine was kept under control to draw attention to the food and water security. It's not about anti-Semitism. It's more about who controls cybersecurity and the law of distribution of the food and water and the info. So we really need to discuss why the UN created a minimum caloric intake for occupied areas, the drug schedule, and allows for torture and war and what the minimum is. That's what we need to really get into, is why was the UN creating those things?
Well, I think what we should get into is why does the United Nations even exist, and why is the United States a member of the United Nations when time and time again they have exploited us and they've taken more aid from us and not paid their fair share, and they've roped us into these conflicts and policies and institutions and organizations that are counter our own American sovereignty. I mean, if you're really America first, then all of these globalist institutions are a threat to the very principle or philosophy of your patriotism. We can't participate in the United Nations and simultaneously advocate for America first. You cannot have two masters, because you will serve one and despise the other. And we have seen the perpetual selling out of the interests of the American people by the political class over the course of the last several decades. After World War I, it was the League of Nations. After World War II, it was the United Nations. And now it's the likes of the WHO and the World Economic Forum and the International Monetary Fund and central banks. Like, all of our interests are constantly sold out to these organizations and institutions. And that's why the leftists in power now have done everything they can to make it illegal or difficult for Donald Trump to remove us from organizations like NATO or the United Nations if he comes into power again, because they are terrified of what happens to their globalist agenda if we really have a populist America First president in the White House again. And I'm telling you what, folks, if Donald Trump gets his second term, third term, if he gets his second term in office, practically speaking, then there is going to be a reckoning the likes of which the globalists and the Satanists and the New World Order and this cabal have never, ever seen before. And they are terrified. And that's why they're doing everything to shut us down. And it's why you need to do everything you can right now to help keep InfoWars on the air by doing things like sharing the clips or going to InfoWarsStore.com, where we have incredible products like Ultimate Fish Oil. Now, fish oil is one of the most popular products, supplements that's taken by anyone. So if you've ever taken a supplement, it's likely that you've taken a fish oil supplement. This has been a very popular supplement for decades. People get it at the grocery store, at the pharmacy. But by going to InfoWarsStore.com and getting Ultimate Fish Oil from us, you help keep us on the air, fighting against censorship, fighting against the New World Order, fighting for the truth, and ensuring that the truth is broadcast all over the world so that we can win this election in the fall. So check out Ultimate Fish Oil at InfoWarsStore.com right now, and thank you for watching. Stay tuned for 30 minutes on the other side.